Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled, From Being Blessed to Becoming a Blessing, Practicing Guru Yoga by Eric Weinberg. Guru Yoga is a brilliant way of integrating the foundational teachings of Buddhism with a meditation practice that can bring body, speech, mind, qualities, and activities to the fruition we desire, to be at home in the universe and experience the universe being at home in us. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, good morning, everybody. This morning, I want to give a talk about Guru Yoga. I hope that some of you got to see the little film of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, our guru, when he visited Columbus a number of years ago. The backdrop of the story, our story, that the Buddha was directly addressing is basically that we're stuck on ourselves and that causes a problem. So I want to walk through all that backdrop and background so it gives you a good foundation and understanding for how to practice Guru Yoga, and then walk through a little bit of practice of a simple Guru Yoga so that if you have an interest in this, you'll have some of the tools to get started. There's plenty of resources at Columbus KTC. If you can join us on Zoom, or if you can join us when we reopen, or if you can just email us, we have people who love to have Dharma conversations, and we love to have relationships where we help each other on the path. But first, we start all these talks with taking refuge. Generally, I chant this three times in Tibetan, but some of you might not know Tibetan, so follow along in your heart. The reason that we do it three times, well, not the reason, but a reason, is that our perception changes as we go deeper in meditation. So the first time we recognize our refuges, the Buddha, the enlightened teacher, the Dharma, his teaching, and the Sangha, the people who have achieved realization on the path, are our friends on the path, and we're requesting blessing. The second repetition is to move a little internal, to realize that our perception of them, our connection to them, is actually in our own heart. And the third time is to realize, or at least acknowledge, to proclaim that that which we seek, we already have. It's just blocked from our vision at this point. And so it's a supplication to have full realization of what reality is, what our true nature is. So we'll do three repetitions. Sanje Chudong Soki Chok Nam La Chang Chu Pardu Dagni Kyap Suchi Dagi Jin So Gi Pe Sunam Ki Rola Pinchir Sanje Drupar Sho Sanje Chudong Soki Chok Nam La Changchu Pardu Dagni Gyabsuchi Daki Jinsu Ki Pe Sonam Ki Drola Pinchir Sanje Drupar Sho Sanje Chudong Soki Chognam La Changchu Pardu Dagni Kyapsuchi Dagi Jun So Gipe Sunamki Rola Pinchir Sanji Drupar Sho. Thank you. Thank you for coming to listen to these Dharma teachings. Please listen to them with an open heart, an altruistic heart, realizing that these teachings can benefit you and benefit all others besides because of interdependence, that we're all connected. So as I mentioned, the backdrop of the story, our story, is that we're stuck on ourselves, a self. We run around pretty much by the end of the day, we've created a library of thoughts that all begin with I, me, or mine. And we've got this imprinted on our consciousness from birth. I mean, we're born, we exit this warm, loving womb where everything is just naturally supplied. And then all of a sudden, there are new sensations. And that's what we've got, is our sense data. And we react to that sense data. That's the first thing we're all about. We feel the cool air we've never felt before. We hear our own cries and the voices of those around us we've never heard before. We smell the smells of the room we're in. Anyway, we have all these things, and almost instantly we have reactions to them. Like, I like that. Maybe if our mother is nursing us. Maybe I don't like that. Maybe because we're a little cold or we have a little gas or something like that. And then there's a whole host of things that are just bewildering and we don't need to care about. That evolves through our whole lives. And we begin to have some kind of consciousness about life, thinking, I like this and I want to get more of it. I don't like that. I want to avoid that. And I don't care about all this bewildering stuff that seems beyond me or doesn't matter to this getting what I want and avoiding what I don't want. In Buddhism, we talk about eight consciousnesses. That's one way of talking about Buddha psychology. There are actually many. The first five are the five sense consciousnesses, and we talk about our senses, like what we see. You know, seeing is believing, for instance, is something that people say. Well, we can question that a little bit. Really, what's happening is our particular sensor, our eyes, can see the visible range of light. But we don't see ultraviolet, we don't see infrared, and if we could, we'd see things in our environment that we actually don't see right now. Obviously, we know this. We've experimented with that. So seeing is believing is like an example of the kind of illusion that we're under. Anyway, these five consciousnesses feed us input all the time, and it's valuable. I'm not discounting it, and I don't think anybody should ignore it. It keeps us safe. It helps us to choose what we do and choose what we don't do. Then there's the mental consciousness, which is our basic discursive thoughts about what we're experiencing through our five senses. So we put labels on it, we put judgments on it, and then we put stories on it. We have reactions to it. then we have more stories that actually are justifications of the reactions that we have. Those are the first six consciousnesses. That's what they're doing. That's what our life is mostly taken up with. And then underneath that is another consciousness that's been identified by Buddhist masters called, Trungpa Rinpoche calls it the storehouse consciousness, where we have these deeply ingrained tendencies and habits, some call them karmas, that give us kind of a habitual response to things that aren't just like an immediate emotional outburst or reaction, but something more consistent, something more habitual, something more like me, in quotes. So those are the seven first layers of consciousness. And to the degree that we cling or crave what we want and crave to avoid what we don't want, we have craving and clinging, which what the Buddha taught in the first teachings he gave is that these things, these cravings and clingings, are not the source of happiness. They're actually the source of suffering. So we've got the these first seven that are, in a sense, our masters. They're telling us who we are, except who we think we are is not who we really are. Beneath all that is the eighth consciousness, which we rarely catch glimpses of. And this eighth consciousness is the open space of awareness within which all of this appears. What meditation does in general is it takes us through a path that helps us let go of our labeling and our judging, our craving and our clinging. It doesn't make our sensations go away at all. It doesn't make thinking go away. It just changes our relationship to all those things so that they're not in the way of directly experiencing this awareness. And once experienced, everything that appears and exists, that we perceive through our senses, that we perceive through our mental consciousness, everything that appears to us appears as kind of realization, as rays, the light rays that light up this open space of awareness. Well, how do we get from here where we really, really think of ourselves as being real and being what reality is, and yet, no matter how hard we work it, no matter how well we do with it and balance it and how skillfully we engage it, we still end up with at least a sense of dissatisfaction and off-centeredness, if not out and out right, not out and out suffering. What the Buddha taught was this basic non-existence of a self in the way that we think of a self. So that's what I wanted to cover first, because it can be confusing. I mean, people feel like, I experience a self. I mean, here I am. This is me. I experience reality. That's what I experience every day. And that's how we see it. The Buddha, through his own path and direct experience, was able to experience this next level deeper that didn't remove everything magically. No, what it did was it changed the relationship between his own mind stream and everything that appears to exist, and made all the difference in the world. So usually according to Lama Yeshe Jamso, we think of two forms of meditation. Really, there are thousands and thousands, if not millions, of different forms, but they really boil down to two different meditation practices: calming down and waking up. So in calming down, we teach shamatha practice. And this is an important, important part of any deity meditation, any guru yoga, anything, because the first thing we have to do is calm down. Shamatha practice, if we practice consistently, convinces our own mind, convinces this mind that we're aware of at this point, that the mind is not the thoughts that it has that run through it. It's not the mental formations, the habits. It's not the sensations and the emotions. And then it helps, if we're consistent in practicing it, it helps develop strength. Strength to what some people call concentrate, although that I don't think is a good word. It's the strength to develop the power to drop a thought. To be able to drop a thought is one of the most powerful things in the world, because when you drop it, it leaves space within which insight can arise, rather than your habitual labeling and so on. So rather than reacting to a sensation, emotion, a thought, which is, you know, the reacting is I like it, I don't like it, and so on and so forth, that's craving. And being able to drop the story that follows, the fiction that we tell ourselves about it, is to be able to drop clinging, to drop craving and clinging, or to drop the two proximate causes of our own suffering. So we practice shamatha, and it's really important. It's not sufficient for the entire path, the entire realization of the path, but it is absolutely indispensable. Once we get a handle on this, you know, where suffering comes from, and the fact that we desire to be more at home in the universe, and we want the universe to be more at home in us. Once we develop that, we realize that we're not alone. Pretty much every single being has the same set of circumstances. We don't have exclusive, we don't have an exclusive experience of suffering at all. It's like all beings want what they want and don't want what they don't want, and generally have what they don't want and don't want what they have. This is true. And so we begin to engender some compassion, realizing that we're not suffering it alone. And this compassion, the wish for our own happiness and freedom, and the wish for others to be happy and free, joyful and peaceful, we begin to incorporate in our practices. And we do this with the beginning of shamatha as a kind of motivation and aspiration. We do it as a practice itself in the practices of mind training, of sending and taking, Tonglen, in the hopes that we develop a good foundation for happiness, freedom, joy, and peace for ourselves and for others, to gain the skills and the strength to begin to walk in that way, on that path. The beautiful thing this does, it's kind of a side effect of that direct kind of practice is that you begin to realize interdependence, that you're connected to others and others are connected to you in ways that you hadn't imagined before. And that gives us a glimpse into the mandala of our life, that this me is actually me plus all my connections and all that's connected to me. And we realize we're not who we realize something like we're not who we think we are. So that's a very, very brief review of the path that leads to Guru Yoga. So we want this this direct experience of this eighth consciousness, this place of open awareness where everything that appears and exists appears as rays of awareness, the lights of awareness, realization. Over thousands of years, meditation teachers trying to help students have developed a few different ways. But the quintessential way, at least in our tradition, in my view, is Guru Yoga. It's a brilliant way of integrating this foundation with a meditation practice that can bring us to the fruition we desire. Simply being at home in reality, in the reality that is the universe, and having the universe be at home in us. It's important to realize that you already have that which you seek, but you have not recognized it yet. All Dharma practices are meant to create the causes and conditions for recognition of reality as it is. And they're meant to train the mind and strengthen the mind and empower the mind so that it can get used to and rest in that reality. I know that sounds funny. We think, I'm used to reality. I'm in reality all the time, but not from a Buddhist point of view. What we're used to is our reactions to stimulus and the story we tell about that to rationalize it all. If we look for this mind, if we actually look for this mind, we can't find it. If we look at a thought directly, any thought, we cannot find where it came from. We cannot find any attributes like location, color, size, and so on. We cannot find where it goes when it goes. Yet, we call all this reality and base our lives on it. This is what Buddha taught is the root of suffering. So the great traditions, out of kindness and compassion, the great gurus, out of kindness and compassion, and the experience of guiding students to the door of realization for thousands of years, developed paths of practice, and this Guru Yoga is one of them. What I'd like to do now, since I've used up 25 minutes of my time with you today, is to briefly walk you through a Guru Yoga, a simple one. And I'll make little comments, but for those of you who want to, you can even use it as a guided meditation. For those of you who just want to listen, I think there's enough content here that you'll get something good out of it. So Guru Yoga is it goes something like this. First, we start with settling our body, speech, and mind through practicing shamatha. So we just settle down for a minute. We sit up straight and we settle down, and you kind of come home to the present moment. You can use your breath, just follow your breath and let thoughts go. Going back to that first thing I mentioned, you know, engaging in the power of letting go of thought, letting go of stories, and just being here. It's always good. It's always important to do what Kempo Kartha Rinpoche taught for any practice, which is to practice using the three excellences. The first excellence is altruistic motivation and aspiration. And the second is to practice properly. And the third is dedication. So once you've settled down, you've settled body, speech, and mind, there are a number of ways that you can engender this altruistic motivation. First is to recognize your own desire to be blessed. And then think about others and realize how much they wish for the same thing. And make the aspiration, make it your motivation that you're showing up to this practice for the benefit of all, yourself and all beings without exception, friends, enemies, and neutral people alike, because every single one of them has this wish for happiness and freedom, joy and peace. Make a commitment to do it for yourself and do it for all others. That's one way. You can deepen it further by contemplating the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma, which the four thoughts can be a talk in itself, if not four talks. But in brief, they are recognizing that this life is precious. It gives you this opportunity to do something that so few beings can do, which is to follow this path. The second is to realize that everything's impermanent. All this stuff, even the stuff we think will stick around forever, won't. None of it ever does. So that we have this extraordinary opportunity, and we should take advantage of it, because this opportunity, things will change. Things will change. The opportunity won't last, or at the very least, it will evolve and be different. The harm and the suffering that follows from that follows like a wheel in the wheel tracks, as the Buddha says. And the third is to disabuse ourselves of the notion that if we get samsara just right, it'll give us what we want for happiness. Samsara is not built to give us happiness. So we all know this from experience, and yet somehow we keep believing in samsara, that if we just get it right at the end of the day, at the end of the month, at the end of the year, we'll get what we want and we'll be happy. Well, it doesn't happen that way. And even when we do succeed at that and we get what we want, how long does that happiness last? Usually not long. Usually we're back to impermanence again. So out of that, we recognize that the teachings of the guru are that you have what you seek within you already. What we have to do is to experience it directly for ourselves. Me telling you about it, or a guru, or a Buddha, even, or a god, or an angel telling you about it simply isn't enough. So we make strong resolve to practice. And we take refuge in those that can deliver the goods, and so to speak, we take refuge in those that are enlightened, their teachings, and our companions on this path. And we pray that bodhicitta will arise, that the good qualities will arise, the qualities of generosity and ethics and patience, joyful diligence, meditation, and wisdom. So we're entering a worldview that is suffused with this interdependence and connection, and that the atmosphere is full of this, full of these, at least aspiration for these six perfections. At this point in the Guru Yoga practice, we just settle down again. Quiet our mind again. And we engage our imagination to see our guru above our heads and in front of us. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, in his 10-day teaching, always recommended that you can have Karmapa as a guru, Dalai Lama, Shakyamuni Buddha, but always visualize them as made of light. And really, he said the best way is to visualize them as the primordial Buddha, Vajradhara. An interesting aside is when Rinpoche was helping us design our new center, he chose Vajradhara as the central Buddha for our shrine. So it's like that. So he's vivid and clear like a rainbow in the sky. You can see it, but you can see right through it too. He's smiling with an expression that is at once peaceful and wrathful, indicating his realization of the absolute nature and his subjugation of all negative forces. His loving eyes gaze straight through into absolute nature. He's surrounded by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Dakas, Dakinis, and protectors of the past, present, and future. They're all resplendent amidst an expanse of rainbow light which floods the whole of space. As you're practicing like this with your imagination, if your mind wanders, this is like shamatha. Just drop the thought or the commentary and return to the visualization. So, once you have this visualization, what I like to do is to supplicate the guru. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche encouraged us to use the following supplication. Lama Rinpoche, I turn to you. Bless me that my mind give up its ego clinging. Bless me that contentment arises in my stream of being. Bless me that all non-dharmic thoughts may cease. Bless me that mind be seen to be unborn and undying. Bless me that illusion be at peace in itself. Bless me that mind in all its manifestations be seen to be the Dharmakaya. And as you supplicate, all the gurus, entourage, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Dakas, Dakinis, protectors, and so forth, melt into light and into him, and he becomes the embodiment of all the Buddhas of three times. At that point, you can begin to chant the mantra. I was thinking that a simple mantra, particularly for this form of guru yoga, is simply Karmapa Cheno or Lama Cheno, which means Karmapa know me, Lama know me. We're asking that they gaze straight through to our absolute nature and see all that needs to be purified and healed, all the knots that have to be untied in our stream of being in order for us ourselves to see what he sees, to see this absolute nature. So we begin this mantra, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno. And after a time of settling down, chanting the mantra, and allowing your whole inner and outer space to be filled with this visualization, with this manifestation of your mandala and the manifestation of the guru's mandala, of which you're a part. The feeling of the guru praying for you, reaching out to help you. You can supplicate again from your heart and ask for the four empowerments. I'll go through them one by one to help you understand them and how they relate to all that I've been talking about. An example of a supplication, it can absolutely come from your own desire. It doesn't have to be a prayer book prayer, but if you want a prayer book prayer, there's one in the short guru yoga that we do before green tara practice and then as part of other practices. In the English is simply Rinpoche, engulf the bodies of us devoted children with the splendor of your body. Engulf our speech with the splendor of your speech. Engulf our minds with the splendor of your mind. Engulf us with the splendor of the four empowerments. Engulf us with the splendor to purify our four continuums. Engulf us with splendor that we may become trained in the four paths. Engulf us with splendor that we may be able to attain the four bodies. And then you visualize the Guru Vajradhara offering you the four empowerments. They're received in the form of rays of light. It's called empowerment because you become empowered to follow a spiritual path and a master. The first empowerment is called the face empowerment. And it really, it's a purification of the body. So it's a purification of our relationship to our five senses. And brilliant rays of white light flow out of a white syllable Om at his forehead. Don't stress about visualizing a symbol or a letter that you don't know how it's written. It can just be a small white orb of light. And the rays are absorbed into a white Om in your own forehead. They completely fill our bodies, our whole body, purifying, healing, and opening all the stains, knots, and obscurations that have arisen from unskillful actions. Next comes what's called the secret empowerment. From a red syllable, ah, at the throat of the guru, rays of brilliant ruby-colored red light stream out and are absorbed into a syllable, ah, visualized in our own throat. The light completely fills our whole body. This purifies the negative actions committed in speech, lies, divisive talk, harsh words, and irrelevant chatter. In a sense, since we, through our speech, make relationships with others, it also is about healing relationships, creating the causes and conditions to be more skillful and loving and kind and compassionate in the way that we connect to others. The third empowerment is called the wisdom empowerment. At the guru's heart center, Om, clear blue, like the autumn sky, sends out boundless rays of dazzling blue light. They dissolve into a blue Om syllable visualized in our own heart and completely fill our whole body. With this, all our covetousness, jealousy, malice, anger, wrong views are purified. So you can see the first empowerment purifies the first five consciousnesses, the senses. The second, the sixth consciousness, the mental consciousness, where our chatter resides. And this one purifies the seventh. Where we carry these habitual things like wrong views, they're purified. Devotion blazes because we can feel it. We're directly experiencing some liberation. And love dawns naturally. And out of this comes the fourth empowerment. It's called the precious word or symbolic empowerment. It's the ultimate empowerment of the absolute nature. It takes us right to and maybe through the door to this eighth consciousness. Lights from all three places come out of the guru like shooting stars. They fly into our head, throat, and heart, instantly filling our whole body with light. All the subtle defilements that mask realization are purified. Delusions, clinging and craving, habits, karmas, all purified, as well as tendencies, are dispelled. The afflictive consciousness is rendered peaceful. And through the blessing of the Guru, our body, speech, and mind, and the Guru's body, speech, and mind have now become inseparable. It's like water being poured into water. Here, in that experience of oneness with the enlightened mind of your teacher, of your guru, Vajradhara, simply remain at peace and equipoise, empty, aware, resting. This may last for a few moments, a few minutes, or a few hours. But when it naturally comes to an end, imagine that the guru dissolves into a sphere of light and into us, filling our whole body with radiance and bliss. And then, from our heads and our toes, we begin to dissolve ourselves into light, into our heart, and then into, it's like becoming a supernova, where the light of our basic awareness, of our openness, bursts out, blessing the entire universe. Once you're connected, to this light within yourself, this space within yourself, this radiance and bliss, you now have transformed your desire to be blessed into becoming a blessing. For whatever arises in your entire universe, thoughts are now gone. Future thoughts are not yet born. Past is let go of with blessing. So past and future thoughts do not exist. Then if we look into the present thought, we will see that even that does not exist. There's nothing in fact, but limitless bare awareness. And each consciousness that arises, arises like a ray of light in this boundless sky. The instructions are to remain in that state as long as you can, which again might be a few moments, a few minutes, or even a few hours. The important thing is that your mind gets used to this reality. That's the important thing, because out of this reality, when you encounter another, you can offer them space instead of a reaction or an opinion or anything else. You can offer them space. And your own nature, which is the light of loving kindness and the light of compassion. So as the light returns to you and you realize yourself on the cushion again, we do the third excellence, which is dedication. So an example of dedication is something like this. With all the good virtue I have accumulated in samsara and nirvana, I pray that all beings would be freed from craving and clinging and discursive thoughts that make up the causes and conditions of suffering, and that they would achieve the ultimate liberation. So with that, I'd like to close this talk. And usually we dedicate the merit of giving and hearing these Dharma talks, but let's consider that dedication I just shared as dedication. If there are questions, I can see the chat now. I wasn't looking at it before. Anybody who has a question or a comment, feel free to share it with us. And I'll do my best to answer any questions. And if not, if there are no questions or comments, it's perfectly fine. We'll just, with a sense of the goodness of having gathered together, to have this dip into the Dharma and this, just carry that happiness, that gratitude into our day. Thank you all so much for being with us. I really, really enjoyed this. It made my day. And you're all wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.